This episode of Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast, is brought to you by NJR Home Services. Hit a home run for comfort with your local heating and cooling experts. NJR Home Services, local experts for heating, cooling, water heaters, generators, and solar. For over two decades, they've made sure home is where you're most comfortable. From heating and cooling to water heaters, generators, and solar, trust your home to NJR Home Services.
Welcome to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. Hook, Line, and Splitter is presented by NJR Home Services. And now, here's your host, Greg Giamborisi.
Hook, Line, and Splitter, episode 42. Good day, everybody. I'm Greg Giamborisi. Thanks so much for tuning in. We've reached the All-Star break, both in terms of the Major League season. Home Run Derby is tonight as we record this part on Monday, July 18th, and the minor league part two. They'll take 4 days off. Blue Claws will be back home on Friday the 22nd with the Brooklyn Cyclones. The Mets in town for Marvel Night in Shoretown. Blue Claws off a good road trip. Went to Aberdeen where they had not played well this year. Hadn't played well against Aberdeen at any point really this season. Took 4 out of 6 in the series. Big win on Sunday. Ben Brown struck out 13 over 7 scoreless innings. Andrew Painter struck out 9 over 4 scoreless innings on Saturday as well. So Blue Claws took 4 out of 6 from the Ironbirds. We're joined by Blue Claws catcher Carl Ellison today on Hook, Line, and Splitter. Since 1986, Rich Green Lawns has been the leading lawn fertilization company of the Jersey Shore, providing lawn fertilization, bed weed control, tick and mosquito control, as well as tree and shrub programs. Mention this ad and save 50% off your first lawn application. Call or text us today at 732-370-5900. 7-3-2-3-7-0-5-9-6-3. So, Carlos, he was great, and you're gonna hear him coming up in just a moment. A guy that didn't even sign with the Phillies until the first week of March, right before spring training, and he's come in and had a really solid year, especially defensively. You know, that's his focus, and he wants to help develop the array of young, talented arms the Blue Claws have. And We talked to Carl about his season, his background. You know, he began his career at Vanderbilt. He's originally from Ohio. He lives in Florida now. But from Ohio, went to Vandy, and then finished up his collegiate career at Lynn University in Florida. And he was all set to kind of move on. And he was kind of sticking around as a coach there, and got the bug to take some swings and ended up getting hurt, but decided he might want to keep playing. So he ended up signing in an independent league in Lake Erie. Played there in 2019 and 2021, and then the Phillies called him right before the season. He ends up here with the Blue Claws. So we talked to Carl about that, and we talked to him about the different young pitchers, and I think you'll find that very interesting and what he has to say about those guys, you know, the Mick Abels, the Andrew Painters, the Griff McGarrys, the Ben Browns, the Andrew Schultzes, and several others as well. So thanks to Carl for joining us. Blue Claws back home Friday. We'll have come back on the other side with some more on that, but first, our feature interview here on episode 42 of Hook, Line, and Splitter. It's Blue Claws catcher Carl Ellison. With Blue Claws catcher Carl Ellison, who joins us from Aberdeen, Maryland. Carl, how are you?
Doing great.
Been an eventful week, right, with the suspended game on Wednesday, the storm on Tuesday with the field getting the right field wall. What's the week been like?
Yeah, it's been – those were two of the most interesting days back to back. I would say we go from the rain out, and then pretty much the whole town of Aberdeen is out of power. That kicks on at about 12:30, and the light, including the lights turning on in the room while we're asleep and scaring the Jesus out of us. And then next day, I think the circuiting or something was still messed up at the field. A few lights around home plate weren't working, and around the sixth inning, you know, can't see anything, and they're like, all right, this is enough, somebody's gonna get hurt. So that happened, and then, you know, thankfully come back yesterday and finish off winning that game and get another game in. So we're getting back on track now.
So you went to sleep Tuesday night with no power?
Correct.
Well, geez. Well, at least weather looks good for the weekend. So I want to start with you and your season. This is your first year, obviously, with the Phillies. You signed in March. At what point did everything come together where you ended up here in the Philly system?
This was, just a few days before spring training, I got a call and and was asked if I was going to be able to make it in a few days. And I was like, you know, kind of in shock. It was all happening really quick. I was on my way home from New York, taking a little trip with my girlfriend, and, you know, it was a good way to finish up that trip and get home and get ready to head to spring training.
So you were planning on going back to Lake Erie?
Yep, I was going back to Lake Erie.
So what was that? This is your first shot, right, in affiliated in ball. What was that call like?
It was a great phone call. You know, I was fortunate enough that actually it was funny because Brian Kaplan and Mark Lowy, both who are in the organization, you know, were able to make that phone call and let me know that I was coming, which was really cool, who I knew from Cressy Sports Performance. So it was a nice phone call, and just being able to get my way here after a long time, you know, it was quite the treat.
So what was the connection there?
They worked at Cressy Sports Performance, where I train in the off season. And, you know, that was where I've trained for the past few years, and things just so happened to line up and work out that way.
So what was your first spring training like? How did it differ from the prep for the season in the 2 years you spent with Lake Erie?
Spring training was a lot longer here, where Lake Erie, it would be a 2 week process. And it was really quick. We get there, you know, a day of getting to know each other. And then it was like inter squads games, getting right after it. And you're fighting for a spot immediately. Obviously you're fighting for a job here too, but it was, you know, a lot quicker, and you had to make your mark really quick.
So what was the, did anything surprise you in the spring? How much were you prepared for what you ended up going through?
I was ready to go. Fortunately a lot of good people I'm around that I have been able to expect, what goes on, at spring training. You know, it's one of those things where I'm planning to go to Lake Erie, but you're always hopeful and waiting for that opportunity to get to spring training. So with an affiliate or with a major league team or minor league team, and one of those situations where you're just working and grinding, and when that time comes, you're just ready for whatever comes your way.
So they called you at the end of February, you signed at the beginning of March. When were you planning to go to Lake Erie?
April.
So were you like ready for a season at that point, or did you feel like a little behind? Like how did that work? Because you weren't planning to head out, you know, for your summer season and for another 4 weeks.
No, I was ready to go. Like I said, it's one of those things where you're always planning for that and understanding that's an opportunity or that's a possibility, whether it be a 1% chance or a 99% chance, whatever it is, you're ready for that. Cause that's obviously what you're working for anyway. So I was prepared. I was ready to go. It was more of just like a mental switch real quick. Like, all right, here we go. No time to think about it. Just go.
So you grew up in Ohio, I think you told me, right? Like in the Cincinnati area?
Yep.
And then you ended up at Vandy and then in at Lynn. How did you end up moving south there from Ohio? How'd you end up at Vandy first?
So when I moved down to Florida, I was playing for I played a year with Midland out of Cincinnati, and then going into my junior year, I was playing for FTB in a fall tournament, Florida Travel Baseball, and just so happened that Coach Corbin and some of those guys were there at the tournament, and I played pretty well, and it was one of those big tournaments down at Fort Myers, so was fortunate enough to visit a few schools, Vanderbilt, Florida, and Ole Miss, and Vanderbilt was the one that I ended up going with.
And then you finished up at Lynn. How quickly did you end up going from there into independent ball?
After Lynn, I took I decided that I didn't want to play. I had an opportunity to play as a free agent with the White Sox, and I was like, I don't think this is for me at the moment. I just didn't feel like I was prepared to handle this lifestyle and just go through the ups and downs and do all that at the time. And I was like, you know what, I need to put this down for a little bit and figure out myself more as a human, you know, before I can get back into that, because that's obviously most important. So I started coaching at Lynn actually for about a semester, and I decided, you know, maybe I should give this a try again. So I took I'd been hitting, and then some of the guys over spring break or over winter break, they're like, "Hey, we're doing some live at bats, getting ready for the season. You want to come out and get some swings?" I was like, "Sure." And first at bat, I hit a homer, and I'm like, "Okay, I gotta, here we go. Like, let's do this." And so then in, I think around March also, or right before March, actually, I signed to go to Lake Erie. And then a week after I signed, I went to a workout with the Tigers, and my second swing of batting practice there, my elbow came off basically and was in my tricep. And I had an olecranon fracture. And then from there, we found out that my growth plate had never been fused together. And, you know, my arm hadn't been healthy for a long time. So I was like, all right, we got to get healthy and we got to just keep going. We're going to do this now. I hadn't played with a healthy arm in quite a long time. So 2019 was my first year back. I played in Lake Erie, played once a week. It was terrible, but it was a great opportunity to get my feet wet again. 2020, obviously, tough year for everybody. But baseball-wise, for me, I was fortunate to be able to get a ton of at-bats and really, like, get my feet under me again, which led me into having a pretty good 2021.
Did you ever think about what would have happened if you grounded the second in your first at-bat?
I probably still would have kept going. I would have kept going anyway. But it was one of those things where you're like, all right, this is like, I can't, I got to do it.
You got the bug when you got back in the box.
Say what?
You got the bug. Like it hit you once you got back in the box.
Yeah, I am a believer there's things that happen that are signs and they show you the way to go. So you just, sometimes you got to follow it.
What was the rehab process like from the elbow surgery?
It was about a 7-month process or so. They had to put a screw in my elbow for a while I was doing rehab, and then once that healed, they took the screw out and then rehabbed that. Well, not so much rehab that, but let the scar heal. And then from there, I just was training, and actually they thought that I had a UCL issue too at the time, but as I was going through training, I was fortunate to have a really, really good rehab guy, Jeff Hart, down in Florida. He's like, you know, this is weird. Like, if they're saying you have a UCL issue and you're able to do X, Y, and Z, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. So when I went to the doctor again, they took a look and they said, you know, like, if you're able to do these things, let's get you on a throwing program, see how it goes. And I started it and never had an issue. So just kept going.
So you said you had coached with Lynn for a semester or a season?
Yeah, just like the semester, yeah.
Like a volunteer assistant kind of thing, or?
Yeah.
Is that something that you had considered as a possibility when you were playing in college?
Yeah, I mean, baseball is something that I just love. So I think it was one of those things where I knew I didn't really want to stop playing, but I knew I needed to take a step back. So I was like, oh, I'll stay around it and just kind of see what happens. And plus, I still had some buddies playing there too. And just, I love that program. So I wanted to help out in any way that I can. You know, Coach Garbalosa down there and Chris Paperno were two good friends of mine. So it was fortunate that they let me come and help out and just kind of use that as a way to get back. Like, I don't want to say get back on my feet, because it's not like I had a big issue, but just an opportunity to kind of like grow up and find a path for myself and do that kind of thing.
How do you think now, you know, your first year in affiliated ball here has gone, you know, with the Blue Claws offensively, defensively?
It's been great. You know, my number one priority here is to help our pitchers and help them grow and be nails behind the plate. I take a lot of pride in that. The offensive stuff is always been a challenge for me and will always be a challenge, and just finding my pathway there. I know will come, but it's always an adjustment. But I know just helping out these pitchers and helping out this staff and doing the best I can on defense to help these guys is my number one priority, and the rest will be extra, and we'll continue to improve.
Well, it's the Sunday games, right? You had the home run against Brooklyn on a Sunday in Lakewood, and you had the two-run triple there last Sunday in Lakewood against Hudson Valley.
Yeah, something about those games. I don't know what it is. I need more of those.
You were pretty pumped up there. I know it was a tough week. You were pretty pumped up. You got that triple, put you guys back in front. You know, you were pumping your fist, big fist bump with Keith. What take us through the emotions on you know, when you get a big hit like that.
Feels good, you know, just to be able to help your team out and drive some runs in and get us going. We've obviously been working hard and things haven't been going our way as much, but the tides will turn. We'll get hot at the right time and things will end up going the way they need to go.
Well, we're taping this on Friday. Last night in game two, you guys had a pretty good comeback from 5-0 down. You got four there in the seventh, fell a little bit short of the tying run on base in the ninth inning, but it seems all these games are right there. You know, some of them into the seventh, some of them into the eighth, some of them into the ninth. And, you know, it just takes one hit by somebody. And that can flip the whole thing.
Yeah, it's one thing here and there. And once that turns, which it will continue to improve and get better because we're getting after it every day, I know things will turn around and be, like I said, just where we need them to be.
So for you mentally, as you help prepare and work with the different pitchers, start with Brad Bergeson, and he's the pitching coach, and you know, the preparation that you do going into a game, whether you're catching it or not, but what kinds of things are you looking going into a series, you know, a team like Aberdeen that you've already played a couple of times, you know, Wilmington, you played all the Northern Division teams that you played two or three times already. You know, what's your preparation like for you going into the series as you try to design plans to attack their hitters?
Talking with Bergie and just watching hitters throughout the week, you know, he does an awesome job on pointing some things out here and there, but our main focus is with these arms that we have is to really be highlight their strengths. You know, they're really good. And if we need to make an adjustment as we go to hitters at certain times or certain situations, that's fine. But our main priority is really to let these really talented arms that we have just have a lot of confidence in themselves and attack the zone and do what they need to do, and trust in their stuff, man, because hitting's hard enough. And when you got guys like we have, you know, if they just do what they want to do and can execute their own plan without giving anybody too much credit, usually it works out pretty well.
Yeah. I want to touch on a couple of those guys, you know, cause you have that unique perspective of being back there, and if Mick is pitching tonight, this will probably run after he pitches, but you've caught him, I think, in every one except one of his games this year. What makes him so tough, and what are your goals for him as you try to build out his outing from behind the plate?
With Mick, you know, it's a young kid with a lot of talent, very mature mindset. And with him, it's just continuing to attack and let his stuff work, because it's elite. He's elite. The way he handles himself on the mound, handles adversity, has just continued to grow and grow and grow. You know, I love to talk to him about what he sees for himself and what he wants to work on. And I do my best to assist him in any way that I can with that, but he's a really, really bright kid and he knows what he needs to do. So, you know, more than anything, I'm just there to assist, put the right fingers down and go from there.
I know his last start last Friday in Lakewood, you know, he didn't have his best stuff. He battled through four and change. Came out of it okay, considering where they could have gone in the first inning there. How has he improved for you as the guy who's caught him almost every start from the beginning of the year?
I think that his ability to, you know, like we talk about a lot, is keeping his foot on the pedal no matter what happens and just continue to compete for 100 pitches, just give everything he's got for 100 pitches and battle that out no matter what the situation or the result, understanding that he's in control. I think he's really doing a good job of learning that and understanding that. And the more he continues to grow and just get more reps and get out on the mound, the better he's going to be. All it is just him continuing to mature and do exactly what he's doing. He prepares amazingly, just like all our arms really do. And the way that him and Bergie's relationship is, like, he's doing a great job.
But Ben Brown last Sunday, this is your first year in the system, and he had been kind of shown some of this in years past, and he just couldn't stay healthy. And now he's been able to string together. You know, he's made every turn so far, you know, past the midpoint now of the season. But he seemed to really take some big strides in the, you know, kind of the second month of the year when warmed up a little bit. How have you seen him improve over the course of the year?
Brownie's another one. I mean, gosh, we could go on and on with these guys, but Brownie's a guy who another guy that prepares really well and is very aware of himself and what he needs to do to be good and able to adjust from outing to outing and, you know, tweak his routine as needed or not needed and just attack. He has elite stuff, just like Mick does. It's a different repertoire, but he's coming at you, and he's done a really, really good job also just to learn himself and learn what makes him really good.
What's his best secondary pitch?
His curveball.
Curveball.
Pretty tough to hit an 87, 89 mile an hour curveball.
Yeah, and he throws 96 or whatever, 98 with the fastball.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Right.
How early in a start can you tell? And obviously you have to work on, you know, these guys are going to have to throw a number of off-speed pitches no matter what, but how early can you usually tell if a pitch is working or not, and do you try to make adjustments within the start? Say, all right, maybe the curveball's not working. Maybe we're going to throw a few more sliders or changeups today.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, it's if something isn't working, we try to, maybe it's directionally or a mental cue or something, to get it working. And then if we get to a point later in the start where one's better than the other, we're going to roll with the one that's better than the other for a while. But don't really, I never really try to give in on a pitch, because it's always, you know, it's not like they lose it. They may have lost feel for a minute, but there's usually ways to get it back. So just, that's really just a communication thing and seeing what they're feeling and seeing if there's anything I can provide or Birdie can provide to help them regain that feel. Cause when you're in the moment, man, like sometimes it's tough to do that all by yourself, but you have a good support system around you and people can help you out.
I've asked pitchers after they've had big starts, you know, how did you feel in the pen? And it seems like half the time they say, not that great, or as opposed to, yeah, I had my stuff the whole time in the pen and on the mound. Like, it's almost like they almost never have both. It's like one of the, or I had a great bullpen and then not so good of an outing. Is that something you've right. observed too?
Yeah, that happens. It's sometimes that
there's no connection.
It's like taking a good batting practice. You can go 0-for-4, you can go 4-for-4. Usually there's a connection. The process of it, I think, is more important than the result of it. That stuff's funky. That's baseball.
We were talking a couple of weeks ago, and now he's in Reading, but Griff McGarry broke a couple of your gloves, right?
Oh, yeah.
Or the string. Not the glove, but like the string. Yeah.
Yeah, those, the webbing. Those guys, yeah. About every other week, these guys are making me restring my glove. So that's fun. I've gotten good at it.
How many do you have with you?
I just have one glove, but I just find some new string and throw it in there and keep going.
So he was obviously in a different spot because he was on a very limited Griff. I'm talking about very limited pitch counts at the beginning of the year, one inning the first game, two innings the second start. So he didn't really get fully stretched out until May. But when he did, you know, he was flying. I think he struck out double digits in at least his last three. I think his last four starts. You know, he's older than those other guys that we talked about, but what made him so tough?
Another guy who, again, I'm gonna harp on routine, very routine oriented, knows what he needs to do, and he shows up to the ballpark every day, has a very mature approach to what he does, just as these younger guys are learning as well, or have learned already, but just fine-tuning it. Griff's really learned what makes him good and how to handle pitch to pitch and make pitch to pitch adjustments, which I think has been a huge stride for him and something that he'll tell you probably is very important for him and his success. Not to mention, I mean, you don't even have to, I don't have to say anything about the stuff.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you mentioned routine, because there was an article that came out this morning in The Athletic, and Matt Gelb, the writer, went up to Reading and he talked to Griff and he talked to Sean Williams, the manager there. And he asked Sean what he's seen from him. And obviously he's only been there for 2 weeks. Or a week and a half, 2 weeks. And he said the routine. And he said every day it's the same. You know, he has an intent of what he needs to do that day. And he goes out there and he does it, and he's focused specifically on ABC. And it's funny that was what Sean said about Griff. And obviously you said the same thing. Would that be something you would tell a young player just getting into baseball, the draft next week? If they had you speak to the 20 guys they drafted, was that what you would tell them?
What would I tell? Yeah, I think that's something important, starting to, you know, you don't necessarily have to have it all figured out, but just some sort of routine, start to mess around with some form of routine and starting to understand who you are as a player and maybe just who you are for the next month whatever it is, that routine may work for a month, and may after a while you see, I gotta tweak this or tweak that. But just starting to formulate a plan and understanding who you are, so that every day you know what you need to do, you get it done. There's nothing to overanalyze. Get in, get out, be on your way.
I remember we talked the other week ago about Andrew Schultz, who it was really cool for him last night. He got his first save of the year in the end of the first game that was started on Wednesday, but he got his first save of the year last night. You know, he's been, I think he struck out 35 guys in 20 innings since the beginning of May. And you were talking about some things that he and Brad have been working on, and you've observed obviously with his slider and how that's become a plus pitch for him.
Right. I think with him, stuff I don't need to say anything about.
Yeah.
But him learning, you know, targeting how he likes to, you know, where he wants to start it, where he wants to finish it, understanding that day what he's feeling, and being able to move from outing to outing, pitch to pitch, and make adjustments on the fly has been huge for him. He, you know, again, he's really formulated a good routine and how he does things too that's working for him. So he's continuing to grow as well. And obviously he's healthy and feeling good, which is fantastic. And he's just going to keep going.
There are some other big arms. We'll get to Painter in a second, but like Andrew Baker's been here the whole year. I mean, you know, he's hit 100 a few times. What's the challenge? And is, do you have to get used to catching 100 mile an hour fastball? Or you're used to it by now.
Yeah, used to it by now. That's just, that's reps. That's reps and growth and just doing it over and over again.
But his fastball has that life, right?
Sure does. Oh, yeah, it's heavy and it's coming at you.
What about a guy like Armenta, who mm-hmm. I know he throws in the low 90s from the left side. He seems to hide the ball pretty well. That's what they were saying when he got here at the beginning of or in the middle part of last year. I know he could be a little energetic out there on the mound. There was the game early in the season when you called time. Right when the pitch clock was running out with two strikes in the ninth inning, and he had walked a couple of guys in a row. He seems like a fun guy to be around, though, for sure. And he can get you out a few different ways.
Yeah, he just brings a little different approach to things. He's a little funkier. He has some deceptiveness, but that, you know, that makes his fastball look harder. That makes that changeup more devastating, and all of that good stuff is his deceptiveness. And from his energetic standpoint, that's genuine. Other teams sometimes get a little miffed by it, but like it has nothing to do with them. That's just Armenta. He has a good time. He loves being out there, and he's just a kid in the candy store when he gets to go pitch. So, you know, you can't knock a guy for having a great time doing what he loves to do.
We had the game the other day, Friday or Saturday, where they brought him in to face the lefty, who he walked on mm-hmm. four pitches, and then he had to face Bowman, who's a good righty, who immediately fell behind 3-0. Now the bases are loaded, and he comes back and strikes him out. And I don't think anybody's been that pumped up as he was right there the whole year.
Yeah, he loves it, man. He loves it. It's fun to watch.
And then I guess lastly, Painter, because I know he's only pitched 9 innings here. I don't know what you've caught him from, in the bullpens, but you know he's only 19. What have you seen from him? From you when you get back there behind him.
Mature kid, super mature kid, physically, obviously well ahead of his years, but continuing to grow. He works his butt off, man. Just super, super mature for a 19-year-old. He's also the biggest kid I know, but he's awesome. He's been great to have here. We love to have him, and the Phillies are fortunate to have him as well.
When he threw the other day, on Saturday, you know, he was throwing a lot of breaking balls too. And he only threw 3 innings, but he retired all 9 guys. He only threw like 35 pitches, but there were stretches where he would just throw, you know, 8 or I think he threw at one point at least 7 curveballs or sliders in a row, which is 20% of all the pitches that he threw in the whole game. And they couldn't touch him. And he still has the 97, 98 mile an hour fastball, you know, in the back burner that he could just bring out whenever he wanted.
Yeah. Right. Right. So, they're struggling. If they can't hit it, keep throwing it.
The thing that you've mentioned, though, with all these young guys is maturity. And it seems to really, you know, it's hard to quantify that it's easier to quantify 98 or this movement or this drop or this spin rate. It's hard to quantify maturity, but it seems like it's something that, that really comes through from those guys. And, you know, you see that working with them on a daily basis.
Yeah, I think it's huge for these guys. You know, some really, really talented arms that have quite a bit of attention on them at times, and being able to handle their business and knowing what's important and focusing on what they need to, I think it's huge testament to Bergie and how he has them focused daily and has really brought them along as well. He's done a great job, and I know the guys love him and what he has to say. I think that's kind of, these arms have started to form a culture among themselves, whether they realize it or not, but they have an identity, and they really work their butts off.
And for you, lastly, and thanks for a few minutes. I really appreciate it. You know, I know you want to play for as long as you can. Have you thought about going into coaching when you're done? I mean, obviously you can only play until you can't play anymore. You can coach forever, but you know, have you thought about that when your playing career is over?
I'm sure I'll do something in the baseball world when I'm done. Right now, I'm gonna keep riding this wave and keep doing what I can to be out on that field and helping arms out and helping my team win for as long as I can.
Well, keep up the great work. You're doing a great job, and I appreciate a few minutes. Good luck tonight.
All right, absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks to Carl Ellison for joining us. He was just tremendous. Enjoyed talking to him, and certainly one to root for the rest of the season. Lightstar Energy Group, a leading energy brokerage firm headquartered in New Jersey. Our goal is to provide clients with premium energy management services to lower electricity and natural gas costs and to provide a long-term energy management strategy. We pride ourselves on bringing each and every individual business the same benefits of deregulation enjoyed by universities, municipalities, and all high-volume energy users. Tailored products and contracts, lower costs, personal attention, and outstanding service. Call us today at 732-722-5880, 732-722-5880 to learn more about Lightstar Energy Group today. Phillies made their first round draft pick last night on Sunday and took Justin Crawford, an outfielder from Bishop Gorman High School in Las Vegas. That, of course, a spot where the Phillies have gone before to Las Vegas, where they took Bryson Stott out of UNLV in 2020 or 2019, I should say. And he, of course, up with the big league team. Now Bryce Harper's from Las Vegas as well. As I record this, the Phillies are about 7 or 8 picks away from their third round pick. They'll do rounds 3 through 10 today and then rounds 11 through 20 tomorrow as part of the 2022 Major League Baseball draft, which has been moved later in the year. Remember, it used to be in early June, but moved later into the calendar and built into the All-Star festivities. So they took Crawford. He's the son of Carl Crawford and thus the cousin of J.P. Crawford, now the Mariners, and J.P., a first-round pick of the Phillies in 2013 and a Blue Claw that year. And for the first half of the 2014 season, J.P., now he's playing very well on an exciting young team there up in the Pacific Northwest. So we'll do more on the draft a bit later on. Before we say goodbye today, though, just a couple of quick notes. I want to mention the work that Ben Brown has done because, you know, coming into the year, he has been a guy that I guess was a little bit under the radar because he had been injured and missed some time. And, you know, in the Philly system, you had Mick Abel and you had Griff McGarry, but Ben has just been absolutely stupendous this season. In fact, he struck out at least 10 hitters now in 4 starts. Yesterday, Sunday the 17th in Aberdeen, he struck out 13. He faced 22 batters in the game, and he struck out 13 of them. And since the beginning of May, he has thrown 56 and a third innings and struck out 90 hitters. Just been phenomenal, has been. Really had one hiccup, and that was in Lakewood against Aberdeen on June 18th, he gave up 6 runs, but since that point, he's been fantastic. 2 earned runs or less in every outing, or 3 earned runs or less, I should say, in every outing except that one on June 18th. Overall on the year, 101 strikeouts in just 69 innings and a 3.26 ERA. And obviously, do not be surprised if his next start comes in Reading. At least I haven't heard anything, but I wouldn't be surprised if his next start comes up in Double A with Reading. Andrew Painter was the Phillies' first round pick, speaking of the draft, in the 2021 draft out of high school in Fort Lauderdale, and he joined the Blue Claws on June 6th. He made one appearance, and then they shut him down for a few weeks. Since coming back to the Blue Claws, or since being reactivated, I should say, he pitched on July the 3rd in Wilmington, July the 9th against Hudson Valley, and then July 16th at Aberdeen. All he's done is throw 9 innings, allowed 4 hits, no walks, and struck out 15. And he struck out 9 over 4 perfect innings in Aberdeen, and he just toys with the guys. Now, we only saw him here in Lakewood once, and I haven't gotten the schedule yet for the weekend, but I would imagine while the Phillies might use the All-Star break to give some guys some extra time between starts, like Ben Brown or Mick Abel, because they've made every turn so far this year, I don't know that they will do that with Andrew Painter. And this is, again, just speculation, because he just had a little bit of time between starts, and Painter's only thrown now 12 innings since the beginning of June. He's only thrown 18 innings since the beginning of June. But at the same time, so let's say he pitches on Saturday, Sunday, and hopefully he does. It'll only be his second game in Lakewood. But the one thing that you notice with him in his one game with the Blue Claws in Lakewood on July 9th, how quick he works. And he gets into that rhythm, and he flies. Now, a lot of guys work quick, but yeah, there were a couple of pitches looking back at it on the MILB TV feed, and you can see the pitch clock there on the screen, where he starts his motion with 12 seconds left on the pitch clock, which is just incredible. And obviously he has, you know, tremendous command. He got 4 strikeouts against Hudson Valley the other day in 3 innings, 3 perfect innings, and 3 of the 4 strikeouts were on his curveball or his slider. So it's not like he just rears back and throws 98, but it's nice to be able to rear back and throw, and throw 98 miles an hour if you need it. So we'll see when we see him again and all those guys, but Blue Claws are back home Friday. So that's Marvel Night with Thor, special jerseys. Saturday is Bruce Springsteen Appreciation Night, the Born to Run for Beer, and Asbury Fever. They'll play live, Asbury Fever will, 6:15 in the Sandbar as part of the Bells Brewery Summer Concert Series special jerseys. Those are sleeveless, by the way, the Springsteen Night jerseys, so you want to check those out as well. And then the family fun stuff on Sunday, Kids Eat Free, thanks to Sabrette, members of the Jenkinson's Boardwalk Blue Claws Kids Club. For more on that, visit blueclaws.com/kidsclub. Bruce Claws Night, visit blueclaws.com/Bruce. So a lot going on this weekend in Lakewood. It's just a 3-game set, but it's jam-packed. And then another week on the road, Blue Claws will be in in Wilmington for that. So they'll end up playing 12 out of 15 on the road. And then August will come along with a series of home games, 18 of them in 24 in Lakewood in August, a very jam-packed 3-week stretch that will kick off on Tuesday, August the 2nd. Blue Claws fans, the Phillies' future is here with MILB.TV. All home and most road games stream live. The only way to watch the Blue Claws on any device this season is MILB.TV. Subscribe today to watch over 6,500 games, including all available playoff games from over 100 minor league baseball teams live or on demand. Download the MILB First Pitch app from the Google Play or Apple App Store to watch on the go. Use promo code BLUECLAWS at checkout and save $10 on a yearly subscription. Visit MILB.TV for details today. Logan Ohapi and Eric Miller played in the Futures game on Saturday in Los Angeles, so congratulations to those guys. Miller was here briefly in 2021 and briefly at the end of 2019, which was his draft year out of Stanford, and Ohapi, of course, was here for the bulk of the 2021 season from the beginning of the year and in early May through late August when he was promoted to Reading, and he's having a great year right now for Double A Reading. MLB draft ongoing. We will be back maybe later this week with another episode. Thanks to Carl Ellison, Blue Claws catcher, for joining us here today. This has been episode 42 of Hook, Line, and Splitter. I'm Greg Giamborisi. Have a wonderful day, everybody. Thanks for listening to Hook, Line, and Splitter. It's a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast.